Have you heard the joke about the narcissist?
No.
Yeah, you have.
No, I have.
Yes, you have.
What's the joke about
the narcissist? I've told you the joke before.
Oh, you're gaslighting me right now.
Exactly.
I feel like you were gaslighting me because maybe you have told me a joke about a narcissist and I wasn't remembering it. You were, that was a setup. I don't appreciate this shit.
Congratulations, everyone, on another awesome week. I am your host, Stephen Woodson, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Keith Parker.
Hello.
And you guys are listening to Congratulations, Your Divorce. Parker, what's up, buddy?
Besides immediately panicking, because as you were doing the intro, I knocked two keys off of my keyboard, like my space bar and my alt key just landed in my lap.
Wow.
So I got that sorted real quick, which is nice. Hopefully you didn't hear the clickety-clackety.
I didn't, actually.
But I could not wait for this week's episode, because for the past couple weeks, I've been windmill dunking on you in fantasy football because it's been a rough time. But
if there's a compliment coming, let's get to it.
we're getting there because, well, I'm only speaking bad about your old franchise, right?
That's right.
Because yeah, the previous owner. There's been a rebirth. Mm-hmm. There's been a rebranding in our fantasy league, and that new brand is 1-0. I mean, it carries some baggage from the previous dynasty.
It's got some dead weight, but yeah, 1-0.
It's 1-0. So congratulations to you, sir, on getting your first win in our fantasy league.
I appreciate that. Yeah. The Joe Mama's franchise is very happy to be joining the league. I appreciate the congratulations. I am 1-0 under the new name. I've made a couple different trades this past week between us and Larry, who we've mentioned on the show before. So worked out both of us. All three of us actually got a win this weekend.
We did. I secured my spot in second firmly in the league. And
I secured my Larry spot moved up to ninth.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I think Larry's at seventh. So like, I'm having the best fantasy run of my short fantasy career. So I'm just going to keep riding this while it burns high, because the fantasy gods love balance more than anything. And so I don't know where they're going to get it from, but I hope it's not from my team.
I'm just
looking at you, Kyren Williams.
You're not catching your sophomore slump, which is surprising, because usually second years are the worst, because you think you get a really good grasp and you seem to actually have a good grasp on it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, once you get into the numbers, I got excited. I was like, all right, I play storylines. It's fun, man. It's fantasy, right? That's the whole point. I think people lose this fantasy of fantasy football. Like,
yeah,
make it up, have fun with it. There's all these fun little storylines. There's all these little data points, and there's franchises, and the competition between me and you and other people in the league, and the smack talking. It's a good time. Yeah. So
I have a lot of fun. I wanted to talk about something that is not fantasy, though, and something that is very real and very ingrained in both of us just because of past traumas, and that is triggers. Because triggers are something that I still fairly new to me in my mental health journey. It's something that I was not prepared for. No one told me that it was going to come. When I had my first quote-unquote trauma moment, I didn't know that shit was going to have remnants that just kept going further on down the road.
Well, I can tell you, out of all the trauma that I've had in my life so far, there's only been one that's left me with a piece of paperwork, and that was divorce. I don't have receipts for anything else or instruction manuals on how long that shit was going to last or hang out, or if there was an expiration date on it. And I think that you bringing up that triggers are new to you and your mental health journey is, it's kind of an important thing, because triggers aren't just new to you. They're kind of new in the mental health space in general, because before people really put a label on this of being triggered or having a trigger, we kind of just tossed it up to like, that's the way that person is. People were just the way they were, right? Jim was just an angry person. Nobody asked why Jim was angry. Mm-hmm. And Jim couldn't articulate that he's angry because when he was 8, he watched his dad beat his puppy to death with a stick because he got drunk one time. And that carried through Jim's life, his entire existence, and manifested in a bunch of different ways. But it's hard to fight something that doesn't have a name.
Yeah.
It's hard to fight an unknown enemy.
Well, you're not sure if it's make-believe. That's what I struggle with. So whenever I feel a trigger or one of these moments pop up, I don't know if it's real or if it's something I'm making up. And when they first started happening, I quite honestly felt like I was losing my mind. Like I was actually becoming clinically crazy, because I would get in these fights with a woman I was dating, and every time I had reacted a certain way to something mundane, and before we know it, we're in this high intensity, high escalated match. And I felt at the end of it that it was just, it's all my fault. Why am I getting so agitated about these random things? And I had no clue that a trigger is something that someone hurt me in the past, and what's happening right now reminds me of that hurt. So since I couldn't fight back then, I can fight now. And that creates a recipe for disaster.
I mean, anytime that you're dragging past trauma into a present situation, that's definitely a formula that will never balance itself, right?
Yeah. I think I've been trying to force that too. It's like my past trauma can still live in my current place. And that no matter how hard I try, like you're 100% right. Past trauma has no place in your present.
I mean, you would have think that I would have learned eventually over the course of my 10 years of marriage that banging my head against that wall would not have worked. I mean, from, you know, I was damaged goods coming into the relationship, right? It wasn't like I had taken time to sort through all my childhood trauma and put all my little boxes in. No. I was carrying a bunch of bullshit going into this relationship just like she was.
Yeah.
And I mean, there were times that shit from deep, deep, deep in my childhood would come up. And one of the biggest things that, and even still to this day, kind of manifest is it's actually my computer. Because growing up the way that I did, I didn't have much control over like my personal space or who was entering or exiting the house. Like I had a lot of family that lived in a very small house. We always had strangers and people coming and going. So like I never had control over a space that was mine. And the first time in my life that I actually felt like I had control over a space was actually a digital space within a computer. Okay. I was able to keep my hard drive and it literally like I keep my hard drive in the order I wanted it. I named my file folders, whatever I wanted them to be. I'd set my background and, you know, starting back in Windows 95, right? Mm-hmm. All the way back in those times. Well, you know, I didn't realize it then, but I realize it now. It's been my security blanket through most of my life is that I just don't let people touch my computer because it's the only thing in my life that I can password protect and keep people out of. So
interesting.
It didn't come from any of the people I was around through high school or college or even into my marriage. It all stemmed from some shady people from my childhood. So I was misapplying this trauma all throughout my life. But man, it led to issues in my marriage because she wouldn't want her own computer or her laptop would be in the other room and she'd want to be on my computer. And it fundamentally bugged me at my core. Why? Why do you want to be on my computer? There's other computers in this house. You've got your phone. Like you can do what you need to do on your shit. Why do you feel the need to be in my shit?
You sound like my ex right now.
Yeah. And most people, they're like, well, what do you got to hide, right? Like, that's the fucking weirdest part about this whole thing. I had nothing to hide. If she would have asked for a copy of the hard drive, I'd have printed that bitch out and given it to her on the nicest, glossiest printer paper I could have found. It was just, I don't want you just double clicking on random links. I don't want you disorganizing my desktop. I don't want a new icon to be there. It's control. I didn't have control over most of the other things, but this computer I have control over, and I didn't want anyone to fuck with it. But I didn't have that language. I just had, bitch, don't touch my shit. That's the best I had, right? That's all the language I had to go with it.
That doesn't really work. That's not healthy communication.
No, not at all. What am I telling her? What am I actually, you know, instructing her about how to help me navigate this feeling that happened to me in the past or yada yada? I'm not doing any of that. I'm just blowing up on her with irrational feelings that are 25 years old on a scenario that she wasn't around to witness. She's only becoming the victim of.
So I see that happen a lot, actually, whenever people have triggers or people have PTSD, victims turn other people into victims. Like when I was 18, my house got broken into and half of my shit was stolen, laptop, phone cases, shoes, different things like that. And flash forward a little bit of time when me and my ex-wife were just dating, she tried to surprise me at my apartment and clean up everything. When I came home from work, I noticed everything was different. Everything was moved around. Next thing I know, we're into it. I'm getting on to her for messing with my stuff. I had no clue that that just tied back to me feeling insecure about my home and wanting to control my environment because it's already been disrupted before. So that's just one of many moments where I turn her into the victim when she, you know, she had no reason to be.
Yeah. She was trying to do something nice. Right. And then your old feeling of being violated is now expired, but has resurfaced and you're beating her over the head with it. You're like, how dare you violate me? And she's like, motherfucker, I cleaned your apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, why are you mad at me for? Like, y'all are disgusting anyway. You should be thanking me. Like, you know what I mean? Cereal bowls were in that fucking sink I had to scrape Lucky Charms out of. Like,
we were not disgusting. I mean, I was not disgusting. My other roommate.
You weren't.
Yeah.
I was like, I know the other roommate. Don't start with me. Right? Don't do this.
The worst part of it all was that I was creating a pattern of this unaddressed trauma that whenever bad things happened to me, I would never look at them. I was just like, oh man, that sucks. I guess got to move on. Got to man up. Got to keep on trucking. And I would never look at it. I would never stare my trauma in the face and be like, okay, how did this affect my life? How am I going to be different going forward? And how can I make sure that doesn't affect other people? Like, that never happened. So whenever my ex did cheat on me and when things went wrong, all I did was band-aid it and move on. And so I just kept racking up these moments that were eventually going to come back and bite me in the ass.
Yeah, it's not just going to bite you in the ass in that relationship. It's going to, you know, you didn't know it then, but it's going to bite you in the ass for the rest of your life until you actually go back and solve them.
And maybe even then. It may even continue.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even then. I would like to be optimistic and say that, you know, once I get it solved, eventually it'll actually finish dissolving. I have plenty of experience of holding on to shit for too long or not going back to face it. Because, I mean, I brought my own baggage, and there were plenty of stuff that she didn't need to deal with. There was plenty of items that I should have solved before I even got there. There were plenty of things that she did as well that, you know, caused a few things or could have started a few things. And I mean, the primary example being, you know, the first year of our marriage when she walked out. When she came back, I guess I thought I had forgiven her. I thought we had settled it. But I guess in reality, you know, just being honest, I think I just buried it. Mm-hmm. I was like, she's back. That's good enough. And what ended up happening was that without processing that, anytime that she left the house, it became a trigger for me. Like I almost got like my palms got sweaty because I never knew she was coming back.
Wow.
Because there was a time where she left and she said, like, you know, bye, sweetheart, love you. And then that next day she was like, I found a place to live in Conway, and like, she was gone. And so anytime she left, that became a reality. Now it's now an option that she's not going to the store. Right. Like that old adage, right? I'm going to get milk, be back. No, that shit happened. Like that bitch left and didn't come home. And she said, I'm gone. So once that got implanted in my head, it carried over for that relationship. And it also carried over until, you know, later on in life, spoiler alert, but it kind of started off of one unresolved event.
I think you said it really well with it. That is now an option, because that's the way my brain works with this, is that I never fathomed that would happen. I never thought I'd be in this scenario, but now I know that's an option. Now I know that when she goes to the gym, chances are the guy that's running next door on the treadmill is going to end up with her phone number, because it's happened once before. It can happen again. So now I'm just constantly scared of her going to the gym. And the shittiest part is that that carried over into my other relationships post-divorce. I had to sit down and address with myself that whenever someone I know goes to the gym, that doesn't mean they're going to hurt me. That just means they're going to the gym to better themselves. Like, it has nothing to do with me. And that was like, it still bugs me to try to shut down that individualism and sometimes like closet narcissism, that it has nothing to do with me.
Well, unfortunately for you, right, it wasn't like your ex was sleeping with a tennis instructor. And so now anytime you see someone playing tennis, you're like, oh, you know, your ex, she sowed her seed in a multitude of realms. That really it backed you into a corner. And I hate to say it, it feels like I'm being a dickhead saying it that way. And I hate that I have to. But
we're here.
You know, but it backed you into a corner because it was, nothing was safe, right? It wasn't just the gym. It was the gym. It was your favorite bars. It was your church. It was your favorite Popeyes, the tire change place, right? It was, it became everywhere in town. And then also electronically or, you know, through Facebook or social media or whatever it was.
And that's why I have depression and anxiety, because the world isn't safe anymore, Parker. That's just the shittiest part. Like, that's what I felt like. I had so many triggers and so many eggshells standing around me that nowhere was safe.
And this is where me and you both made the same critical mistake. We assumed that eggshells were tied to people. And that when those people went away, the eggshells went away.
Yeah.
But they fucking don't.
Nope.
They stay.
If anything, they grow a little bit.
Because now they're unlabeled. Yeah. They're messy.
You're just stepping on them. You don't realize that you're even stepping on them until it's too late.
Yeah.
The other day when we were kind of running through some of our show notes, you had made the comment that they're not really eggshells, they're landmines. Like you find yourself sitting in a minefield without realizing it. And like you really don't know that you're stepping on a mine until you do.
Well, I mean, most of us are just kind of derping through life optimistically, right? Unaware that our trauma lurks just slightly below the surface with nothing more than like a bobby pin stopping it from exploding. And then you wondering why you're trying to choke out the McDonald's worker in the drive-thru because they asked you for ice or no ice. But we all have it. And you can call it what you want because we, between the two of us, have called it eggshells, triggers, landmines. Booby trap. We've had 100 different names for it, right? But the important thing is that we've heard it reference different things, but it all means the same thing. It's unresolved trauma that leads to unexpected incidents. And I don't care who you are. I don't care what background you come from. I don't care how good you were raised or how bad you had it. We all have those landmines, and it has been crucial to understand that my life is not as smooth and as pillowy and as meadowy with flowers as I like to think it is that there are patches in my life that I have to operate a little differently in. Now, that doesn't mean it's impossible for me to operate within them or I should avoid it altogether. It just means there's different rules here and you can't always take those rules into new scenarios with you.
So that's what I want to dive into some, because when I figured out that the rules needed to change, it was almost too late, I think, for my sanity. Because I was dating a woman for a while, and we had gotten pretty serious. This is about a year and a half or so after the divorce. And me and her were sitting on the couch one night, and she gets an alert on her phone. I glance over. That's a habit that I'm not proud of, but it's hard for me to break. Even if your phone goes off, Parker, like I will just glance at it. I'm like, who is that? So her phone goes off. I look over at it. I see a man's name on Snapchat immediately. Like immediately my heart starts to race. My hands get clammy, my breath starts getting shallow, and I'm sitting on the edge of the couch like, what the fuck's happening? I know she has guy friends. I've made peace with the fact that she has guy friends. I know she's in a gaming group, whatever. Why am I panicking? Why am I upset right now that a guy is texting her? Man, by the time I had those thoughts wrapped in my head, just asking the question, why am I upset? I was already speaking. And that was the scariest part, that I was no longer in control of my body. I didn't feel like that, maybe just making excuses of it, but it didn't feel like I had any control over what I was doing. I was just simply reacting. Because how many times had my ex gotten snaps from other men? Like I have opened up her phone before to see her tits out, sending them to another guy. So whenever I see my new girlfriend's phone and she's getting a snap, that's where my brain goes. It's like, oh my God, what's she doing?
I mean, there's a lot to unpack here, but I think first thing is with your almost out of body experience, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think you're using it as an excuse by any means, but I think that's what happens often when people act purely out of emotion.
Purely out of and trauma.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like, right? There was no logical like, oh, look, Snapchat. I wonder what they're talking about. It was Snapchat. She's fucking someone.
Yeah.
Like just immediately.
Jump straight there. That's it. Because there was no justification, right? Like I didn't choose women like that anymore. There was no longer going to be someone in my life that would cheat on me. But for some reason, well, I mean, I know the reason. For the reason that I got fucked in the past is now fucking me in the future.
But you allowed that past trauma, right, to come into this new relationship. And I would imagine that causes a blowout fight, depending on, or it could, right? Could
it did.
Could be handled calmly, but that's what I figured. I figured shit blew up.
I got scared, and I didn't know how to address that I was scared. And so it came out accusatory, like it usually does with me. That's a toxic trait I have to deal with. I was just trying to express my nervousness around the situation. But the problem with that is that the moment you express nervousness in a place that it's not warranted, that it's immediate distrust. So whenever she heard my words of nervousness, it was just like, well, I've done nothing to make you believe that I would. So it's offensive to the other person. I think I even said that last week. Like sometimes these triggers can become offensive to your current partner or to anyone else in your life.
1,000,000%. Like imagine, like you said, y'all were getting serious, right? Like this was, it wasn't, I'm pretty sure y'all may have been like contemplating moving in together and things like that. So imagine having a conversation the night before about, hey, maybe we'll move in, we'll find this apartment. And then the next night you're getting into a fight because you don't know if you trust them over a Snapchat notification. Like, I can imagine like that would send your partner into a, I mean, not necessarily a spiral, but puts them in a weird fucking spot.
Mm-hmm. It puts everybody in a weird spot. That's the issue that I have with it, is that like, I now have to manage and control my feelings that are just as confusing to me as they are to her. So when we were both confused, we couldn't figure out a way through it. We eventually did. We talked out, and through a bunch of tears and crying, I finally figured out that what this was had nothing to do with her. And I was logically able to explain that to someone else and to myself, that this has nothing to do with you. I've just gone through a similar scenario in the past. And what I am proud of myself for is that in that moment, what I didn't do, I may have reacted emotionally, but what I didn't do was try to control the situation. I didn't tell her, hey, you can't have Snapchat. That upsets me. What I did do was look at myself and be like, man, why does Snapchat upset me? That's a problem. Mm. Like, she's free to have Snapchat and talk to whoever she wants to. It's just a messaging platform. It's not always used for affairs. Like, she's just communicating with friends in the way that she knows how. And I'm very glad that I didn't put that on her and say, you can't do this, which I think happens quite a bit.
Well, I mean, was there ever a time that you did that where you were like, you told a partner like, hey, that makes me uncomfortable. You can't be, you get rid of Facebook or stop messaging people on Instagram?
Not post-divorce. I know that I told my ex-wife, Snapchat doesn't need to be in our house. Like, we can't trust it. You've already hurt me twice now on the app. I think it's just not good for us to have it. It's too easy. It's too tempting to have an affair whenever those messages just get deleted. So post-divorce, I was very, very particular about never implementing my style of life or what I think onto someone else. For two reasons. One, it's not good to be controlling. It's not good for me to force my opinions on other people. Two, I don't know that I can trust my opinions. That trigger showed me something, that it's hard for me to trust me with this amount of trauma, with this amount of unprocessed trauma. So when I look at those triggers and realize that sometimes my reactions can be volatile, that means that maybe I don't need to be the voice of reason in that scenario. You know, I kind of need to lean on the shoulders of somebody that's around me, or give myself space to process it on my own. And I think another reason why those feelings were so intense was because a lot of my fears were validated in the marriage. With the amount of times that she cheated on me and the variety of ways that you brought up earlier, everything was a possibility. Everything was an option, like we said. So I'm really curious how you navigate something whenever you didn't get those fears validated as much, but you still have the triggers that linger through your current life.
Yeah, I mean, my ex may not have had the resume that yours did, but the fact that they both had resumes meant that it was an option. Yeah. And for me, the trigger wasn't necessarily the event, right? It wasn't the location, them leaving or something like that. It was just the fact that someone that I loved at any point in time could decide that they just didn't love me anymore and they could just up and leave. So it was less scenario based and more just like day to day based.
So your triggers weren't necessarily from a historic event. It's more what could happen, that the possibility of getting abandoned was always there.
It was definitely the abandonment was a core thread through there for sure. And that trigger manifested from something else in childhood, right? So all this giant ball of yarn is all woven together. But unfortunately, the exhaust pipe for it with my ex was she was curious about what another life looked like if she could meet and go see and go do. So as long as she wasn't out meeting or seeing or doing, you know, and I could see it, then it wasn't really a trigger. It was when we were out and she was like, hey, look, I made a new friend. Like, this is Sam. And I'm like, we're in our 30s. Like, why are we making new friends? Like, who the fuck is Sam? Like, you don't make new friends in your 30s. Like,
nobody has time for that.
Yeah. So that was kind of more the triggering event for me. And I just had to make sure that moving forward, I had a person that was in a similar mindset for me. And I'm not trying to jump forward too much to solutioning, right? But I had to set myself up in the future knowing that if I was going to enter in a relationship with someone, I needed to be on the same playing ground with that person as far as like what we were looking for. Cause that question really never happened early on in my relationship.
Well, that's hard to have those raw conversations with people because you don't, kind of to my point earlier, you don't want to manipulate or mold someone to you. And finding someone just like you is very difficult. Finding someone with that level of understanding. And I have history to prove that that's not always helpful. So getting to a place where you can have a raw conversation with someone and say, hey, these things upset me. I don't need you to change anything, but I want you to know ahead of time, these are the things that could potentially set me off. And if we ever reach that moment, I either need space or I need you to walk with me through it, because it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, it's not going to be pretty. But the thing is it ain't you. Because the one thing I don't want anyone assuming is that I'm asking for people to operate differently around me because I've been cheated on. Mm. What I'm asking is that there are going to be certain times in the world to where I'm going to need a moment. And I hope that moment's not ugly, but something's going to leg sweep me and I'm going to be upset about seeing someone, or I'm going to be up when I'm in these vulnerable states. Maybe I'm in a new outfit. I think I'm looking good. Someone spills a drink on me. It ruins my whole night. To you, it's a shirt. To me, it's the fact that I just lost all hope of any relationship with anyone ever. Yeah. And you have no clue that that's what that is, but that's what that is. And it's very important that the people around me understand, if I know that area exists, if I know that landmine's there, I'm not saying don't touch it. I'm saying if I ever hit it, just kind of be patient with me, because I really don't want special treatment. I don't want people going, oh, well, you know, Keith, and you got cheated on. And oh, you know, Parker, he's real sensitive about this. Like, no, like it is what it is. Like, maybe I am sensitive about certain things, but just understand, I'm going to try to take that as far as I can to me and take it off of you. Because even my partner, I don't want to put that bullshit on them. It's my bullshit. And even though it may be valid bullshit, and even though it may be real things that happen to me and I feel a certain way about it, 99% of it, if it's in regards to my partner or you or my sister, it's old bullshit. It's invalid. It shouldn't be here to start with. So I personally have a responsibility to chip away at that, to show respect to all the new relationships and the new parts of my relationships with old people.
I like that. What do you do with the sensitivity though? Because there's a lot of times that, I'm not proud of this, but I feel like I have quite a few triggers, and I have big triggers, and then I have like normal day-to-day triggers. And when I say day-to-day triggers, like there are legit scenarios where something will happen. Like I said, a phone going off or whatever, where I immediately glance, or my brain just jumps to a conclusion, and then I have to stop and say, nope, I'm not in that life anymore. And then I'll just continue on, and they can be that fast. It's like, wait, nope. Okay. Move on. And then there's other big triggers where I get back in the situation where I'm on the couch and I don't know what I'm doing. I really am just reacting to this point. So the sensitivity fucks with me a little bit, because I feel a little bit like a bitch. Like whenever you have this amount of triggers, like it's kind of hard to not feel like the guy who just wears his heart on his sleeve. So I own that, and I try to address that and always make sure I monitor. But do you feel like you have that sensitivity as well, or the shame with the sensitivity?
So I would say that on the things that I can be less sensitive on, I try to turn it down as much as possible. I'll give you an example of, you know, one of the first times that me and the girlfriend went out at the bar together.
Sorry, my cat is meowing like crazy right now. So just please ignore him.
Okay, I didn't hear that. So, but yeah, one of the first times that me and my girlfriend went out at the bar, I was nervous because she looked gorgeous and she had her heels on and her ass was up and it looked great. I love you, sweetheart. But she looked stunningly beautiful. And I was nervous the whole night that someone was going to try to hit on her, someone was going to talk to her, and that I was going to lose her because, you know, there's going to be someone that comes up that's bigger than me and handsomer and has more money and yada, yada, yada. And she flat out told me, like, I'm here with you. You're my person. You don't need to be concerned about that. And I was like, well, if someone comes up to talk to you, she's like, you're not going to do shit. Because, like, if I need you, I'll let you know. But otherwise, it's my problem. And me and you were playing beer pong and I saw someone come up and I got in between them and she got mad at me about it because she had told me I can handle it unless I need you. But I let my old bullshit come up and I felt justified. No, he shouldn't be talking to you. That's you're my girl. But I had disrespected her and her request. She's a grown woman. She knows how to reject advances. And if she did know how to reject them, why should I be with her to start with?
Yeah.
Like if I can't look over and see somebody come up and go, hey, sweetheart. And she go, bitch, please mush and like go on about her day. That's the kind of woman I want. So why would I not want to see that happen and see that tested? And so when she kind of brought it to me of like, hey, listen, I get where you're coming from. I get that you want to be protective of me, but I've made it this amount of time without you. I know how to get rid of unwanted attention and I know how to let people know that I'm taken. Mm-hmm. So you've got to allow me to do that. Otherwise, we're going to have issues.
I think that's definitely something that needs to be said, because the quality of your partner can greatly affect how your triggers are handled. Because when you do have someone who is healthy in themselves and they're strong and they're very secure, they can tell you, I got this. I know this is a trigger for you, but you do not have to worry about it. And then it's on me to just trust. It's on me to let go, basically, to let go of my past, understand that it's back there for a reason. And I've moved forward and I've gotten better and I've grown more. So this can't affect me as much now. And that is a lesson that I didn't quite get, because the partners that I had before my wife were not conducive to that style of life. I felt myself more often in scenarios where the interaction became more volatile because they weren't healthy and secure and I wasn't healthy and secure. And so our triggers fed into each other's triggers.
Oh yeah. You start two people's bullshit like that together, it does not normally end well. It usually ends pretty explosively.
Mm-hmm. Which is another frustration of mine, because I had the time to work on these triggers and work on these mental health habits when I was single, until I quickly realized that it's really hard to work. You can't prepare for a trigger. Like you really don't know they're there until you cross one. It's same as the landmine that we talked. Like you don't know until you step on it. And so I found myself more often than not feeling like I was perfectly healthy and feeling like, you know, life's just amazing. And I finally conquered this. I conquered this trauma. I conquered my pain. And then someone's phone goes off and it's like, the world's ending. Like, I can't take it anymore. I'm not okay. I've never been okay.
Right. It's all a lie. It's a foe. It's a ruse. Yeah. Like, it's gone. So I know in those moments, and when that cell phone goes off and you finally, all these fucking bells and whistles go off in your head and like, oh shit. Those moments for me were so jarring that I could never forget them, but I almost felt a duty to myself first and to my friends and family next to try to catch every one of these as early as I possibly could and chip away at them, because I don't like the feeling of having to tell people to operate differently around me.
Yeah, I can't stand
it. I don't like the fact that I'm just now starting to celebrate Halloween with my kids because of some bullshit that may have happened on that day in the past with my ex. The person that I want to be doesn't want their new experiences to be limited by old trauma. Mm-hmm. And that's all these triggers are. And I'm not talking about healthy warning, you know, reading people's body language, understand what's going on around you. I'm talking about old dead weight bullshit that you're hanging on to because somebody crossed me when I was young or somebody did me dirty. And now I assume every time that scenario comes up, it's going to be that way. It's not. Mm-hmm. And if I operate in that mindset, it's dangerous, man. It's a dangerous mindset because I limit myself. I limit my experiences, but I limit my capabilities to love and to interact and to just experience the world.
Yeah, I had to accept that there was a possibility of a different outcome. If I've only experienced pain and I only think pain's going to happen, why the hell am I living? Why the hell am I even trying at life? I have to expect that there can be better and there is more hope for it. And since I can't prepare for a trigger, the only thing that I could prepare for was how I processed pain. So I know pain's going to come. That's going to be a constant. There's going to be things that'll set me off. There's going to be things that'll piss me off. So like you said, learning to let go, learning a little bit of acceptance about some of these situations, logically thinking through and knowing that what is in my past is in my past. It can be a part of my present only if I let it.
And with all the new pain that's going to be coming just from life, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about doomsday thinking. I'm talking about just existence. Just that alone is enough to keep you occupied. Why the fuck do we need to keep dragging this old shit with us? There's too much other new shit to worry about that's actually valid that we need to put our energy into. Me and you, we got to let go of this old shit. We got to stop hanging on. It's fucking with us. I got extra gray hairs because of worrying about damn notifications on stuff.
That actually is the silver lining for me, though, when it comes to triggers, is because seeing how I didn't process them in the past and how they're affecting me now shows me how to process the painful moments now. So whenever I do get offended or I get resentful or I get upset about something, I know that I either have to schedule an appointment with my therapist or go for a long walk and figure it out myself, which is exactly what I feel like doing right now. So let's go ahead and kick it to last call.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
Last call! You got any big plans this weekend?
I'm pretty sure I'm hanging out with you, right? Aren't we drinking this weekend at the Festival of Darkness? Which is totally not a satanic event by any way, shape, or form. It's just a beer festival for Halloween.
Don't tell people about our cult, Parker. That's not for public information.
I realized. I was like, are you going to see the Festival of Darkness? Yeah. It's like, that's...
I'm bringing the goat's blood, bro.
No. Yeah, that's food trucks and craft beer. What? Yeah.
It's
not.
It's the most hipster thing you could go to. It really is. I thought you remembered I'm not going to that. I have my family's Halloween party this weekend. So that's...
That's right. That's right. Fuck you and your family shit. How about that one?
Well, speaking of family, we had family lunch like we always do this past Sunday. And we had a very strong debate. So this debate's actually been going on for about 2 months now. And I think my brother and his co-host, because he also has a podcast called The Best Things Podcast, they got into a giant debate over what's better, lemon or lime. And my family got super heated about this, but I wanted to ask you your opinion, because I know you're a very opinionated person. If you had to take away one out of the entire world, would you choose lemon or lime? Only one can remain.
Lime's got to go. Lime's got to go.
You basic bitch.
Hey. First of all, lemon is dope. All right. I will go full Bubba Gump on talking about lemon. Just lemon pie, lemon ice cream, lemon sherbet, just lemon, dehydrated lemon peel, sugared lemon, candied lemon, boiled lemon. I love lemon.
Half of the things that you just described, I feel like, could be replaced with an orange. My argument is that a lime is known...
I'll fall off a cliff.
A lime has more uses, especially if you take in Eastern culture. Lime is used for all types of different dishes. It's used for marinades. It's used for scents. It's used for drinks. And it has such a specific flavor that it's hard to replace with a lemon. Lemon is just acidity, usually elevates a dish, but you can accomplish that with oranges or tomatoes or vinegar. So I get that lemon has a lot of good uses. I just feel like they're basic. I feel like it's just simple American things, and we're not taking into the account of the depth of flavor that lime usually brings Hispanic, Asian, and Indian dishes.
I think you're biased from squeezing lime on your tacos and your barbacoa and your pad thai. I think you're underestimating the versatility of a lemon.
So you're
the cleaning products that you get out of a lemon, the amount of desserts that you get out of a lemon, right? The amount of just absolute raw product you get out of it.
I could do away with all of them. I can't think of one that I need. What? So the side of catfish, like I don't get my lemon there anymore. Oh no. I never even squeeze that on there anyway, but I do use the lime on every single dish that it comes on the side of.
Okay. From now on, you get water with lime at every restaurant you go to.
I'm okay with that. They do that.
Water with an orange slice. Enjoy that.
Sounds good. That's great. What makes the lemon so special? Why do we need that? Why that specific citrus?
Because none of the fucking other ones go with it. What are you going to grab a grapefruit and put it in your damn water? You communist? Like, what are you doing? Why are we discussing this? Like, why is it a choice? Lime is a topping, right? Lemon goes in shit.
Go to hell, Parker. I'm glad we're ending the season on this, because I think I need a break from you, if I'm being honest.
I bet you prefer Chicago deep dish pizza over thin crust.
No, thin crust all the way. Yeah, I don't need all that bread in my life.
Damn.
Yeah, you're really the wrong person I should ask this question, though, because like you're such a huge fan of lemon icebox pie. Lemon. Key lime.
Lemon cookie, lemon anything. Yeah, it's a low-hanging fruit with me.
Hopefully we never have to make that decision. But like we said, this actually is going to do it for us for this season. Season 2 is officially wrapped up with this episode. We just need a little bit of a break, to be honest. We can't really get on the interwebs and talk about mental health without taking care of our own first. So that is going to do it for season 2. We appreciate everybody for sticking around and listening to our crazy stories. We are definitely not done. We have so many stories left for you, and we will come back to those around February 2024, so about 3 to 4 months away from now. Until then, you can follow us on social media. We're going to be posting some more updates, try to get some little short clips out there for you guys, and check out our website at congratulationsnetwork.com, or hit us up on our Congratulations Network hotline at 501-503-1307. And until next year, don't forget to celebrate yourself, keep your mental health in check, and keep growing.
Get that woo.